So, Edwin Precision didn't let me to continue variations which had been started yesterday by Sergei Lakin on the hate, love and passion at the molecular level. But those who are interested, actually, there were some questions, there are some references to that subject. So what I was pushed to speak about was about electrostatics, which tries to take into account the structure of the solvent. And is it such a thing at all? And I will... The whole thing had a kind of a happy blue period where all things looked to be very nice. It was like 20 years and no contradictions, no serious ones. And then later on came a bad period with a lot of trouble. So the blue period is related with the names to mention here will be my colleague Vorotintsev, who is now professor in France. And from the bad period, I would outline the very important role of Godehard Zucman, who is on this program and is sitting at this conference. And there will be also, if I have time, I'll show some post-earthquake shocks on this landscape. And those who would be interested can pick up collections of reprints on the subject from room 2115 upstairs. That's my office. Now, let's go back first to some basics of that business. I don't really have hopes to tell you all the stories of this blue period, of course not. My main role will be at least not to let Adrian to sleep after the lunch. And let's start with the constitutive relationship. Basically, let's start with the Poisson equation. In a system where you have external charges and the medium. And you may start it with writing for the medium also some bound charges, which are denoted here as rho of r. Since, and this rho of r could be just absolutely microscopic charges in this system. If we are speaking about, say, water, then you will have charges residing on oxygen, charges residing on protons, and so they will be all moving around on average. The average value of these charges in the absence of external field, external sources in a medium, which is a dielectric, it will be simply zero, the average value of that quantity. But when you have some external charges, it would not be zero. It would be polarized and arranged in a certain way. And you may ask yourself, let me calculate this average field here, and this average field here will be related to the average value of the counter charges, and maybe this average field will be interesting for me. I will invest a few seconds about it later, whether it's interesting or not. But the first point is that this system of equations is, of course, not closed. You have to close it some way because rho is separate, E is separate, but we know that rho depends on the field which will be in this system. So you can use several type of closures here. One type of closure is to write some microscopic equations to close that. And that will be the integral equation approach. If you want to describe molecular liquid, that will be the way, for instance, to do it, and so on. Then you may assume some approximate functional which would relate rho and the electrostatic potential, phi. In the same manner as it is done in the Debye-Hückett theory, where we had epsilon already here because we have taken the polarizability of the medium and we are describing explicitly only the bound charge induced charges of the electrolyte. Now we're not doing that, we have all charges here. And then you will have some kind of approximation here which can be nonlinear, then you can go ahead with that. The other thing will be a linear response, where you would assume that rho and E are related in a certain way. They are proportional to each other. And now we are coming to the language of the linear response theory. If you go then to make one next step, as people are writing that the induced bound charge density is equal to divergence of polarization field, then you may introduce after that, then you put this term here, move it here, then write that E plus 4 pi P is equal to induction, and then you have this famous equation here for the induction in that case. But now in order to get to solve the problem of the field, you will have to write constitutive relationship, which would look between induction and electric field will have this type of a general shape. So in general, you have no local relationship between the induction at the point R and the field at the point R prime, and this is sort of regulated by this kernel here, which is non-local in space and also is tensorial. And the classical electrostatics, macroscopic one, which is used in this audience all the time, we are talking about it because we don't have something better, then will be a limit in which this non-local kernel is proportional to delta function and Kronecker delta, and that will be the macroscopic dielectric constant. And it's obvious that you can do that if the fields would vary at the scales of the characteristic variation of this function much slower. Then you basically end up with the same result. But if not, what to do then? Now, you can start going along these lines, but you have to keep in mind the following question here. That is, would it be what you will get in the end, a mean field theory? Really, because if you are, even if you know this function, and go ahead with all your calculations, now all your equations will be not differential equations, they will be integral differential equations, and you're successful with that, now the question what you have calculated, because you have averaged already this value here, and you're getting averaged field. And in some of the problems, you will have these fields, for instance, sitting in some exponentials. And in principle, you have to average this exponentials as a whole, but not what is sitting there upstairs. And in that case, if you first solve this problem and learn about the fields, you will get a kind of mean fields, and that will give you a saddle point result and what you're going to get there, because the fluctuations then will not be there. You'll have to consider them separately with this Hubbard-Statonovich technique or any other technique in that field.
The about time fluctuations, space?
No, it's space at the moment. Yeah, in the moment. I mean, I will be speaking about phenomena which are slowly varying in time. But we, of course, can have them in time as well. Wait a second, I'll show you on the next slide. The other problem which we will have before the problems are coming. So that's a kind of warning, but there is nothing apart from that. Apart from that, it's quite microscopic. And here, I give a set of constitutive relationship for the local electrostatic. Sometimes we are using epsilon, sometimes we're using chi, which is epsilon minus 1 divided by 4 pi. And here, in the local electrostatics, also you can have retardation, I mean, relaxation phenomena, then you will have a non-locality in time as well, so your relationship will be non-local in time. And then, I don't think it's seen there very well, I move here. And then in that case, you can make the corresponding Fourier transforms in space and time in order to get your equations simple algebraic form for the Fourier transforms. Of course, you can do that, only if you have translational invariance of this kernel. If it depends not on R, R prime, but depends on the difference between R and R prime. And this you can do in homogeneous and homogeneous medium, you can do that. And then you can go to Fourier transforms in space and in time. The next step, it's still a language, the next step you will have any tensor of that kind can be split into a longitudinal part and a transversal part with respect to the vector k. And one can easily check then in electrostatics, you will deal only with the longitudinal response function. And in that case, you will have, you'll end up in your electrostatic equations, which are now will be algebraic, for your K Fourier components, you'll have only epsilon, a longitudinal figuring here. And for instance, here I draw an expression for the Fourier transform of the potential, which is created by the charge distribution, which is embedded into this medium, and that's how it looks like. And then at the next stage, you can take a back Fourier transform, and your electrostatic potential created by them will be given by this integral, where you have this longitudinal epsilon of k, which is controlling everything, and all its singularities controls you what will be the field created by these charges here. Second warning to this point. Well, if we are going to use it for some defects or, objects which are immersed into water, and having in mind water as a primary object, then we basically, of course, see that when we put this object, we take make an inhomogeneity here. And if you have such an inhomogeneity, then the correlations between these points, for instance, can be different than the correlations within these points. And that means your epsilon, your response functions will not be depending on r minus r prime. They can depend separately on r and r prime. And that makes the problems here. And so what you can do, nevertheless, you can do some approximations. Something like cutout approximations. You assume that they are the same here, but there is nothing here. Or otherwise, you can assume something which is coming from plasma, that you have some specular reflection of polarization excitations here, and then you will see that your result will be pretty equivalent to the case whereas if you have water inside and outside. At a first glance, it sounds crude, but then you can check it, comparing, for instance, with this approximation, how much of the difference you get, and you can study it much in detail. And in the end, you also can prepare some results for the general form of R and R prime dependence. Okay, the same thing will be near interfaces. Again, it will be that prime dependent, that will be normal coordinate, and there are a set of approximations how to relate it to that function, and they are sometimes very crude, sometimes less, and the best results, if you can go ahead with your calculations and express your results through the moments of this function in general, then to solve one problem which is measured in Liverpool and the other problem which is studied some in Boston, and then you, if you have, for instance, in these different problems the same type of moments of this function, then you can extract it by fitting one experimental data there, and then they can use it in another place the same moments. And that would be a nice way to go. And sometimes it appears to be possible. Now, the last part in this introduction is to tell you that due to fluctuation dissipation theorem, you can establish the relationship between the response function, between this longitudinal dielectric function, and the correlation function of the bound charge density fluctuations, rho of k. And that means that this function, when it appears in your electrostatic calculations, works as a messenger of the structure of your liquid, of your medium. And in that way, you hope, if you, for instance, have measured this function, have calculated in some other way, or have approximated it, you, in that case, will be able to express it through this function. And the difference of non-local electrostatics in this sense will be not to solve each time the whole problem from the very beginning, as it is done in the molecular, dipolar molecular mixture models, this integral equation approach. You start to solve it again from the very beginning. Now you take as a basic thing your response function, and then you go ahead in various problems. You get results very fast, and then you can compare that. And in hopes, if your objects which are in the medium are not very strongly perturbing the medium or perturbing the way you can expect that, in that case you really can get some general relationships in this studies. Now I'll give you now just three examples of three quantities which are quite important. One is the interionic interaction in the bulk solution, which when you go ahead with these results which are written in this the so-called immersed charge distribution model, when you assume that water is everywhere and you just embed the charges which are responsible for the distribution. So you have two ions which are described by charge distributions rho in R space, and then these are Fourier transforms of the charge distributions, which I'll show on the next slide in a second. And this is the a result for the interaction law between the two ions, and it's written in the form of a Coulomb law with a certain screening or effective correction factor here. We can call it screening factor. And this factor is expressed through epsilon of k according to this formula. So you will know what you will be your deviation from the Coulomb law if you know what is your epsilon of k and if you know what are your rho, the form factors of your charge distribution. The other important formula is the formula for the free energy of solvation. And this is the generalization of the classical Born formula, which you will get simply when epsilon of k of water is constant. It doesn't depend on k. As I said, the limiting case of local electrostatics is when our tensor is proportional to the delta function, delta r minus r prime. So in k space, it means it's a constant. So if it is a constant, and this constant is equal to macroscopic dielectric constant, so you may take it outside of the integral, and then putting here a Born model of an ion, you will immediately get the classical Born formula. Then you can calculate a very important thing in kinetics. When you have a hop of an electron from one ion to another ion, and the important characteristic, which was called by Marcus Lambda, and in Russian school it was called reionization energy ER, but that's essentially the same thing, may be also calculated in that case, and you will then have here this in the response part, response function of the inertial polarization here. Epsilon infinity is a high frequency polarization dielectric constant, and then you will have this relationship with rho and this response function. And you may compare then the results, if you know your epsilon of k, how they would be compared to the case when this quantity is constant, when you can take it outside of the integral, then you will get the famous Marcus formula. Now, if we are scared about epsilon of k, we must be also scared about the charge distribution form factor models. So the Born model, which is nothing else than just an infinitely thin layer of charge of the radius A, will give you this form factor, like in the theory of pseudopotentials. I know this type of form factors there. But a smeared Born model, which was analyzed by Godehard Zuttmann, gives you a more complicated formula. And here you have a smearing parameter eta, which just smears the charge on a sphere. And it appears to be quite important in some of the cases. I'll show you when it is important, when it's not important, that they are smeared here. So now let's go back to some idyllic period, when the simplest approximation for epsilon of k, with which we started many years ago, seemed to be the so-called Lorentzian approximation. And this Lorentzian approximation gives you epsilon, macroscopic epsilon at small k, and some short-range epsilon at high k. And you can get this formula from the most simple Hamiltonian of the system, which will be, if you have, for instance, polarization fluctuations, which are correlated in space in a Stein-Czernike fashion with only one coherence length. So if I rotate a molecule here, I will feel this rotation somewhere there, and you will try to rotate in the same direction there. And that will be my correlation length lambda. So you can go ahead with this type of Hamiltonian, which it will be nothing else than Landau-Ginzburg Hamiltonian without phi 4 terms, with just simple gradient expansion, and you get that type of approximation. And then this is a picture how it looks like. You see that for larger correlations in your medium, so it's a Schapper function. If there are no correlations, it will be zero. It will be just a constant, like in the macroscopic limit. So now you can, for an exercise, calculate the potential created by a point charge in such a medium. And you again may rewrite it in the form of Coulomb law with effective epsilon. But for this effective epsilon, you will have this expression with epsilon of k. So if you will put inside this expression this type of Lorentzian approximation, then you get that type of effective dielectric constant. And the graph of it is shown here. You have some short-range epsilon at small distances, and then you approach larger macroscopic epsilon at large distances. And you have even not only parameter lambda, but there is also a little bit related with this parameter, with the ratio of the macroscopic dielectric constant to the short range one. And if this is 2, or even if it's even 5, then you have a factor of 80 to 5, it's a factor of 16 here. So that's why it's extended a little larger than simply to lambda. And this type of plots were just honey for the people, for the physical chemists who for many years thought they knew that the dielectric constant near the ion always is smaller, must be smaller than the macroscopic one. What did they say to advocate that? They were saying there must be some structural constraints because you cannot rotate, polarize all these molecules. That's exactly this thing. If you have this coherence length, which limits your polarizability, which basically is seen, for instance, here, because if you would calculate the bound charge distribution around this point charge, you would see, just exactly in this model, you would see that yeah, this bound charge is equal to 1 minus 1 over epsilon. So that when you put, say, charge minus 1 here, it will be cancelled with this 1, and you get as if the charge divided by epsilon times in the end. But you get this epsilon times screening only when you go behind the area where all these bound charges accumulate. And in classical electrostatics, lambda is equal to 0, and this is a delta function. So all this charge, 1 minus 1 over epsilon, is exactly accumulated in this delta function around this ion, while in a local case it is smeared in a certain radius here, and only when you are behind this radius you are getting to macroscopic screening. That's what you see here. And that sort of is in line with the expectation of this physical chemist. But the other physical chemist was saying epsilon is small because you have dielectric saturation. Everything is frozen by high field. This is not here in this picture. This picture only tells you if you have a structure, you will have something like that. Okay, let's go ahead. Let's try to see how it works experimentally. We don't have even now we don't have optical tweezers which will take two ions close to measure the Coulomb law, I guess. But at those times when we were starting, there were experiments made by Schwarzenbach, who worked with aliphatic and alicyclic diamines, yeah. And the whole trick was that you have these substances, and you may have here a proton, and they started the free energy of protonation of this object when you have a proton here or when you don't have a proton here. So the difference between the two free energies will be attributed to the interaction between the protons. And that you can do, and then you can vary the number of ligands, here CH2 groups, I mean, you can make a longer chain, and then you can have some kind of Coulomb law. And then you have this curve, and then you may treat this data, for instance, if you believe in such a simple formula, which I showed you on the previous slide, then what you could do, You could take the energy measured by Schwarzenbach, divide it by this factor, subtract 1 from that, yeah, okay, and then all what will be left will be this thing, and then take a logarithm of that, and if you take a logarithm of that, you have an intercept will be this quantity, and that will give you a straight line with a slope 1 over lambda. And that is shown, this treatment of this data is shown on this axis here. But, and then you see that, yeah, it looks like a straight line, and you get, for lambda, you get something like 4 angstrom, and for this short range epsilon, you get something like 4 again. But then if we remember that there was a background electrolyte, you can make generalize a little bit this theory, and you'll get here a Debye exponential. It will be such a 4, instead of 1, you have Debye exponential, so at large distances, you'll have Debye screening, and at short distances, it will be like 1. You'll have this non-local screening due to the solvent. So you subtract this Debye exponential, and then to do the same, you see again you are more or less on the straight line with some corrected values for lambda and for epsilon, which looked good. On the other hand, of course, we paid a price to make this Coulomb law measurements. We had some stick in between. And this stick perturbed the solid. And then there was a lot of studies how much it perturbs the solvent, and it appears that not very much. Okay, it perturbs, but it gives you also a medium of low dielectric constant. And since you have this depletion, without it, you're more or less not getting very much different results if you take into account. But you get them much more cumbersome. And I would not be able to show you many examples, maybe one more for the reorganization energy. Again, if you take into account this type of effect, instead of Marcus formula, which is shown here, 1 over the distance between the centers, the measurements were done again with a stick in between, let us say. It's an intramolecular charge transfer between the two centers in one molecule when you can change the number of ligands. So you control reorganization energy as a function of the distance between the centers here. So the Marcus formula will give you the law 1 over R. This one will give you another curvature. And experimentally, you see this type of curvature, and so on and so on. I don't want to continue that because I want to present you not the idyllic part, but a very hard part. It was just a soft movie. Now you'll have a very hard movie after that. But before we go to that hard movie, I would say that the idyllic period was summarized in a book which was published in some strange way. It was published in Russian because we prepared that, but we didn't have time later to write an English translation because it was no time for books for us. And but what was in that book is not advertising the book. I mean, the idea, because most of you won't be able to read it in English. This is an English content of that with a lot of errors, I guess, in here. We didn't do any proof. But with the help of this technique, a number of phenomena in the bulk of the solution has been studied in that chapter, and then also interfacial phenomena. And I would say the most interesting things are coming in the area of the linear screening of fields created by discrete sources in non-uniform systems at interfaces. Because the interesting things are coming when you have a competition between different type of responses. For instance, you have metal and electrolyte. In liquid, you have one type of response. In metal, you have electronic response, electronic polarizability, field penetration into the metal. And you get a number of very non-trivial results, which are really redoing the classical electrostatics. For instance, in classical electrostatics, the charge is always attracting to the metal due to the Imlich law. In a local electrostatic, you will get it, and that has been checked by various methods and also was independently obtained by Philip Anderson. That you get a repulsion from this metal at short distances. And the crossover where the repulsion is turning into attraction is determined by the scales of the field penetration into metal and the properties of the electrolyte and so on and so on. So it was quite a big area. What I want to stress here, in this area, a big piece of results depends on the particular shape of epsilon of k of the solvent, because we move all the time to electrochemistry, electrolyte, and things like that. And they are, in that sense, model dependent. But there is a group of results which does not depend on that. It tries to get analytical law, asymptotic laws for epsilon zz prime, epsilon rr prime, to extract the result, to express them through the moments of that function. So when you will have a very true knowledge of this function, you will be in a very good shape. On the other hand, you will also be in a good shape if you will be having these moments in different phenomena, and you can compare how your theory is working. Now, today, I want to tell you about what we know about the non-local dielectric function of water. Do we know anything? And so the picture was with Lorentzian shape was very nice, and it was very easy to work with it. But later came some clouds on this blue sky. And these clouds came from different countries, not only from the United States, and they said the following, that the epsilon of k doesn't go down at all, it goes up. Then it has a negative area, and actually in the plenty of the publication, it was all the time negative there. You have a divergence point here, and the negative epsilon of k. And this is a red class of results here. There was only one paper after which we started to look at these papers at all, which was showing that it's going to the right physical limit. And the right physical limit at very high k is a limit of, as we call, a crazy supervisor. For instance, if Michael Fischer will tell to his student that please treat this data in the limit of Bierum, in the Bierum limit. And he just going there to treat this data. Then he calls him, no, please treat him in the Debye limit. Okay, he was going. Then he calls, no, treat him in the Bierum limit. And so on. What this student will do? He will do nothing, right? Because if the signals are changing faster, then his ability to do anything will just to draw a graph. And that's not enough to wake him then. Anyway. Sorry. Yeah. Okay. This was a frequency analogy of the same thing which you can't imagine in space. Socially it would look, you know, I came from Europe and it's very popular to make roads like that to reduce the speed, for instance. Yeah. And then if you have a very small car, then you will be able to... No, I'm sorry? Oh, I see. Okay, sure. For instance, like that. If you have a small you have a road like that, the traffic should be slow. And if you have a small car, which persistent length or coherence length is small, then you can move along this road safely. And if that... What?
And is it necessary that trees are
inverted? Trees will be important now when you will have a big truck, because it has no chance, he will go straight. And the trees will be in trouble. So, the problem here, and in case space, that means we are sending external signal, the sinusoidal signal of certain k. And if, of course, in nature we don't have such things, but we can expand all our external fields to that type of fields, and so we can see what will be the response. And so if this is a coherence length, if my field is varying this time, it won't be able to polarize this piece of ice in that sense. So it means that at very high k, you must, of course, have epsilon of k must go to 1, and it cannot be anything that particularly remaining to be negative. But when we saw the first data like that, we started to think more attentively about it, and it was clear maybe that the people were obtaining that because they were getting this result in the point-dipole approximation. And a point-dipole doesn't have a scale. As much as you vary your external field, it still will react. So that was probably the reason of that. We now know that it is. But at that time we decided we have to understand it ourselves, and we started our own project and wanted to simulate this water to get this result ourselves. But before going to that piece, I must tell you a few things about the negative epsilon of k. So Kirchnitz and his co-workers were saying that the only forbidden range for epsilon of k is this one. And that was coming from the following arguments. That at k non equal to 0, they found it. They saw only, they can give my Gedanken experiment or my example, that this quantity is a response function. Only this, not epsilon of k. And if you have such a relationship, and if it is a response function, and it must be positive in the thermodynamically equilibrium system, that means that either epsilon of k is greater than 1, or either epsilon of k is smaller than 0. For k equal to 0, one can create two examples. When this is a response function, it's like a capacitor with a voltage control, and this will be a capacitor with the charge control. And then you will have, this must be positive, so epsilon is greater than 1, and from this relationship you have epsilon greater than 1, or epsilon greater than 0, since both should be true, so this should be greater than 1. And so at the moment, and while these discussions were about this type of principle, whether it's true or not, there were first results by Mario Tozzi, who obtained in his simulations for molten salts, he obtained negative epsilon of k. Yes? No, not only. I mean, the negative range, not. It's not for distances smaller than 1 angstrom. It's for k in the range of greater than 2 inverse angstrom. So it's like 2 angstrom like that. Not completely. You will see now. I'll show you the whole picture when it happens on the next slide. Yeah? Okay? Because it's better not to look on epsilon. It's better to look on the response function itself. When epsilon is negative, this response function is greater than 1. Let me explain it because it's important. And so... Okay. So when this quantity is negative, then this quantity is greater than 1. This quantity will be the proportionality between 4 pi polarization and induction. So induction is like external field. 4 pi polarization is like the field response field in the medium. So if your coefficient is greater than 1, okay, when negative epsilon, that means you will have a response field which is larger than external field. At a first glance, it sounds crazy. It couldn't be. But it happens only at some wave vector k. At others, it's not. And when you take an integral, overall everything will be okay in balance. You wouldn't get sort of more polarization than you ask. But on certain wave vectors, you may have it. And that would look like a resonance behavior. Let me tell you what we have obtained to compare it with that. So we got the money, and that was a happy moment when we started to work with Gotthard Zutman. And he started to work with the model of Philip Bopp, which was one good model of water with three charges, two charges, 0.6 sitting here and 0.3 sitting here. And this model gives you very reasonable bond lengths. It gives you right dipole moments. And this is not a model of rigid water in that sense that this water is vibrating. This is a so-called Bopp-Heitinger model of central force type of model. The only thing that this atoms, they are not able to dissociate from this molecule, but they can vibrate. And so we started with a small-scale simulation, only with 200 molecules in a cubic box, which will give you the size of the box, like 18 angstrom. And Gotthard used the Ewald summation method. And the whole thing, to get reliable results there, was something like using several hundred hours of crate time there. And it worked in the following way. Our idea was that we are not going to calculate the bound charge density correlation functions in real space and then to take Fourier transforms from that. We were just calculating directly rho of k, because rho of k are certain exponential ikrs, r's are spontaneous positions of all these charges. So since you have a configuration for the spontaneous positions of these charges, you can average immediately these exponentials, and that saves a lot of accuracy here. Still, it was when Gotthard has started, and we had actually to report immediately to get his extension, and his situation was developing in such a way that he said, he phoned me from Bordeaux, where Bopp was. He said, we have a very good results already for epsilon k, but we have a problem, and this problem is that the dipole moment of your water is non-equal to zero of this box. We have it standing and looking somewhere. I asked where to. He said, I don't remember, but it's looking somewhere, and it's still large. And then I said, let's go ahead and invest more computer time, and then finally he invested more computer time, and this dipole moment, it really fell down to a very small value. And then, as I said, we didn't do the trick of this captain of Titanic. We said, go ahead, but not back forward. And when he invested more time, he got it zero. So you really have to invest a lot of computational time to get these things working. And then what he obtained at that time. And first he obtained a kind of Lorentzian type falling down at the beginning. And then it was going up. And then had this area of negative epsilon, and that he obtained a reasonable behavior at high k limits. These are inverse angstroms. Okay. So I'll I'll show you on this graph. It's better maybe. For a response function, so you have here, if you have a peak, that's a peak of epsilon, when it moves negative, so you have a peak in the response function. So you have 3, so if you divide 2 pi divided by 3, you'll get 2 angstroms. That way you have this peak, 2 angstroms separation. Everything high will be inside the molecule in that sense, but not completely, because you have some collective things at this k scale as well. You have some pecking. Wait a second, I'll show you how it's related with correlation functions. You'll get a little bit.
Are there constraints on the epsilon rule that have to be obeyed?
For here, in principle, yes. In principle, yes. But here, we don't have free electron system. So.
Well, you're summing over the
electrons. Yeah. You're summing over. We have no electrons here at all. I mean, we have only charges, two charges here. Yeah.
Okay, but I mean, you still have to obey. There are some rules that have to be obeyed.
Yeah, right. That's true. No, we didn't check. No. Okay, just a second. So we'll go ahead with that. Now, by that time, he got this result.
There is one where.
Yeah?
Oh, that's it. Why singularity here is k equal 1?
Yeah.
There,
I'm going to answer it now. I'm going to answer it now. Okay? Could you wait? Second. In a way, yeah. So, by that time he got this result, we started to think also about this type of things. So you can extract here intramolecular part of the correlation function, where everything is known, even these form factors are known. These are the lengths, the distances between HH and OH. So, and the intermolecular part. So here you have correlation functions, density-density correlation function between oxygen-oxygen, hydrogen-hydrogen, and oxygen-hydrogen. And, okay, and if you have that, by that time he just found in the literature the data by Soper, who presented exactly what we needed, that was in case page HH, OH, and OO correlation functions. So these were the blue were the experimental points, and the red were our simulations, because he immediately also has read from these configurations the density-density correlation functions, and obtained and saw that it's in good correspondence with experimental data of Soper. Apart from this area, where Soper doesn't insist on his data at all, because at low angles there is no, it's not very reliable. Now, then, about if you look, now you will put this, extract from this data, put the charges on top of that, so we'll get this blue experimental data for epsilon of k, if you use Soper data and the model of charge distribution that we used in our simulation, you get a very good correspondence in this area. Now, the situation here, the question is, why we get this peak? Where it is coming from? So the anatomy of this peak is shown on this insert. This is what we have, the intermolecular contribution for chi, and this is the intermolecular contribution. And they are simply summed one to another, because for chi it's very simple. And you would see that this peak is coming through the intermolecular contribution. It tells you that there is certain periodicity in k space of this wave vector, 3. And if we try to extract what is the main what is the main contribution to this periodicity, it's not so easy to say. So we see it at 3 angstrom here. Look at the correlation functions. And what is special at 3 angstrom? So if we take 3 angstrom here, so what would we see? So we see something, because we are calculating rho-rho correlation function, and rho-rho correlation function is equal to HOO minus 2HOH plus HHH. So you definitely see here some peak in this area for the OO. At the same place, there is nothing special for OH. And for HH, so it's related You may say it's mainly related with a certain periodicity in OO distribution in water. So in that sense, it's not one distance, it's a wave, because you have a peak in k-space for the correlation function. If you have a peak in k-space, that means you have certain periodicity of this type. Well, now why we have differences? I have to rush up a little bit, because the difference is, for instance, Godehard has checked, people were doing all the simulations in dipolar approximation. So if you go beyond the dipolar approximation, in our case, we had all the moments here, the moments of all the functions, and in that case you have, first of all, you get okay behavior at large k, but what was more important, that you are really, in that case, that was our difference. We are getting the sky going down in the Lorentzian fashion for RO calculation, while if you do it in the dipolar calculation, it goes up. So that's the source of the difference. Now, we had some played around with some theoretical formula, which was some kind of coupling of the density and polarization fluctuations. I wouldn't dwell on that point. I wouldn't dwell on physics of that. But we ended up, for instance, with very simple approximations for this response function, which moves you, while in the Lorentzian approximation you have a pole on the imaginary axis, now you move to the complex plane. And that will definitely change you all the screening. It will give you oscillating components to the string. And now this type of, this approximation can be drawn through this function. Now what you can get from all that? For instance, if you will calculate reorganization energy with this new simulated data, you get very unpleasant things. Because you will get huge reorganization energy. Because for some charges, what I've shown here, these are charges, and we plotted here something for the charges of 2 angstrom in contact, and this is a radius for various radii of the ions. You would see that you get very large reorganization energies because the response is too large. You have this over-response in the medium. But when you smear the spheres, you can see that the whole thing is going very much down. I mean, the contribution from that peak is smeared out. That could go along with the interpretation that in this non-local, this peak and the interaction in the response of this peak for the phenomena with ions has a nature of the resonance in k-space. And so if you have various harmonics of the field created by the object which is in your system, and they are smeared, you're off resonance, and the contribution of the peak is going down. Ion. And for instance, that you could see from this picture, you have a screening function, which I said, that will be nice Lorentzian function. For instance, with Lorentzian function will give you the increase in your field, because you have a frozen polarization a little bit. And this type of simulation data will give you oscillation. And you even see that you have options for the oppositely charges to attract in that case. But if you would smear the distribution created by this object, which will be, of course, reasonable because the smearing is very small, and then you smear out this type of effects and you have only small resemblance, small waves of that. Now I want to tell you in the end about the nonlinear effects of this kind. What if you have nonlinear response, then you have more complicated relationship between pi and induction. But what we can do, we can simply do another type of experiment. We put on the field, which is has certain kind of variation in k-space, and we can vary the amplitude of this field. We can do everything. That's a simulation. And so what we did, we have chosen the most interesting points, because now you have to make experiments for each point. So you'll have, instead of one experiment reported before, computer experiment, you have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 experiments. And Godehard developed certain method to run it faster. Now we don't use any fluctuation dissipation theorem. We just calculate exact response proportionality coefficient, which will give us epsilon of k. And we were very pleased to get the same result as we were in the linear response regime. When the fields were small, we got absolutely the same results as we obtained through the fluctuation dissipation theorem. And that's how these results look like. You have this, you plot this row with your bound charge in the presence of your field, and this is the amplitude of the field, and the colors are different k's which I used. And this k10 is exactly the k of that peak. So what you would see, you have a largest nonlinear response for when your k is in resonance with your structural resonance in the linear response. It's very much similar like it happens in the frequency resonance. If, for instance, you are in resonance with the oscillator, if you have a large field, the nonlinear effects are strongest in that area. But if you go to the field, the k wave vectors, which are small, and the smallest one was k1, and that was our 2 pi divided by L. All our k's are 2 pi divided by the size of the box, n is the running number in that case. And the smallest one, if you put 18 angstrom here, was 0.3. And so what we could get in that case, we got the nonlinear effect at, I would say, 3 volts per angstrom, or 2 volts per angstrom, depends how you look at that. And that is not that strong. That means that if you have a field which has Fourier components, an object which has Fourier components, which would be very much really in resonance, then you will have a lot of nonlinearity. And if not, then the nonlinearity will be sort of more moderate in that case, nonlinearity of the water response. Now, just we had also some phenomenological theory to parameterize that. It was all published. So who are interested, they can get it from my room upstairs. So let me make a summary. So for the static response, the summary would be that we have a Lorentzian type behavior for epsilon of k water in small k. We have two divergence points with negative region in between. We have a correct physical limit at large k. And the response function shows a large peak at k equal to 3 angstrom. We have good agreement with quasi-experimental response functions. And the organization energies, Bohr energies, and all the things which are calculated here will be too large if you will take into account literally this resonance phenomena. But if you would smear your ions, they can be reduced to some linear, to some reasonable values. But I told you that I'm going to show you an aftershock. And the aftershock was, the simulation was for a system which was didn't have electrons inside apart from effective potentials between the atoms, which in some sense we're taking that into account. And then we thought with Goddard to check that. What will happen if we will sort of smear out the distribution of electrons here on this water molecule? That's the Butter and Jones famous pictures here. And we parameterize them with some analytical form factors. And then we put these form factors in this calculation, because what actually he was simulating in his model, he was simulating this H, density-density, positional correlation functions. And since he was simulating them for a model where in molecules he had charges sitting on hydrogen and oxygen, of course he was obliged then to multiply by the point charge form factors, which would be equal to 1. 1, 1, and 1 here. And now if we say, okay, let's smear them, though, of course, the simulation may be slightly different, but maybe not that much different, because we are speaking about, when we speak about the intramolecular correlation, maybe they will be affected only small. And in that case, you would see that if you will take into account, you'll get all that peaks, they are moving. You're playing around with the smearing of electrons on oxygen or on a hydrogen, and then your peak before was large, now it's small, and so on and so on. It means that it's actually premature to say that we know what is the non-local dielectric function of water. we can, the right thing to do will be to go along ahead with the simulations and to do the quantum dynamic simulations with electronic polarizability explicitly incorporated there. At the moment, it would not help at all, because when people are trying to put really this electronic polarizability in exactly quantum mechanical simulations, they get in all respects much worse results than we're obtaining in these semi-empirical atom potential models. But maybe in the future it will be possible to do that, or at least to try to do that in some semi-phenomenological model of account of this polarizability. The other thing is, of course, which I had no time to show, since we have frequencies here, and Godehard has a variety of results for epsilon omega of k. I probably, if there will be an interest, he will give a tutorial at this workshop about that. And but this epsilon omega of k, I'm just finishing, was allowing us to check, do we have frequencies there in the quantum range, I mean higher than kT divided by h. And of course we had a lot of frequencies there, and we have a lot of frequencies there. We had to use not the classical form of fluctuation dissipation theorem, but a quantum form, which incorporates the integration over omega with higher than kT, then his hyperbolic tangent is not expanded, and so on. And then you again get corrected results. They are qualitatively the same as I've shown. Again, still this big peak and small peak and so on. And in support of this picture, I would say that the group Ranieri obtained for a number of liquids, including non-polar liquids, obtained absolutely the same qualitative picture with one main peak of the response function, with a satellite peak. The height of the peak is smaller than the water, and you vary them, and even in some very non-polar solvents, you have again pictures like that. And that helped him to explain some unusual polarizability phenomena in systems where you are not expected to see any polarizability at all. So the picture is very open at the moment. The blue period is not it has not yet merged with the red period to give you some orange in the end, but that requires further work, I guess. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm.
At the beginning, I think you said you would allude to the difficulties and the physical significance of going beyond the linear polarization representation.
Mm-hmm.
And sort of, you know, in one's bones, one sometimes feels that if I have two charges close to one another, I enter some sort of nonlinear regime. What is known about that? How significant do you think that could be for some of the binding problems people?
Yeah, I think, for instance, if we take our results as we obtain them, we find that it fills different k components of the field would have different nonlinearity of the response. That's the main message which I want you to take home. Then, if you speak about the small wave vectors, we obtain that there must be a 2-3 volt per angstrom. Important things. Now, if you make an estimate of that, so around the ion of 2 angstroms, that will be just on the surface. In the second hydration sphere, it's already out of that.
So I should think about it, or think about treating the first hydration sphere with post-contact?
I still think that you can take as a basis the linear response results, and then for singly charged ions, this stuff will give you certain correction to your result. That's it. And the basics will be given by the linear response. If you take doubly charged ions, that definitely will be different.
Any other question?
Can I give one illustration? There was a beautiful movie by Alphonse Geiger, who was making a simulation, and he had a charged object here, and he studied what was water doing around this object. He was able to move in real time the charge on the center of this ion. And at the beginning, he had a relatively large sphere. So what he saw at the beginning, this water was a little bit frozen near the surface because it was a large object. And then it was defreezing. It was like hydrophobic hydration. Then it was defreezing. and was behaving somewhere in between, like usual water. You can see a separate movie for the usual water. And then you're increasing charge more than one, and then they again was structurized. There's something in that range of charges.
Mm-hmm. Can I ask a question? Isn't that, you seem to give a lot of relevance to that peak for the small k. Isn't that more or less that you...
A large k?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Is it important at all?
For any theory that...
At the moment, it gives a lot of troubles because it increases the response for the microscopic objects, and you can smear it out if you have some smearing of the objects. And then you end up basically with an old, in quotation marks, Lorentzian response. In that case, only the smaller k wave vectors are left, but it's still some contribution. You mean, it's an open question at the moment. Yeah.
For small k, you have a selected constant epsilon parallel going down and then up.
Yes.
Correct?
Yes.
Now, I think I remember that there were simulations on dipoles.
Huh?
Point dipoles.
Yes. They were all going up.
Yes, it was going up.
All going up.
I think integral equation theory also shows that it's going up. If you do simulations and minimum k is larger than what you see, you don't see the regions where it's going up or down. But can you comment why?
I tried briefly. I think. I cannot. First of all, whether it's going up or down depends on the sixth moment, I can prove it, on the sixth moment of the correlation function in the real space. And it appears to be, and this is OO minus 2OH plus HH, including intra and inter. And if you want, and then it's a huge compensation of positive and negative charges. And then you can go up or down very easily if you have any inaccuracy there. What Goddard has checked, has shown, that if you will take only dipolar moments from our simulation, but not will sum all the contribution there, he will also go up. That's the result.
Okay. Well, thank you.